Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for joining another episode of Future of Drug Discovery. Today, we have Tom with us. Tom did his master's in Munich on structure-based drug discovery, then studied PhD in Oxford on chemical biology. After that, he spent some time at Evotec, early stage drug discovery, and then GSK. And then something happened, something switched, and he started, co-founded Arcturus and became the CEO. We are really pleased to have him today, Tom.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pleasure, and thank you for the kind introduction. So I'd be very happy to go a little bit more in depth about my personal background and then into the origin of Arcturus. As an undergraduate, I studied chemistry. I was really taken with organic chemistry and even more specifically, the actual binding event between a small molecule and a protein. And there's no idea that really drove me into chemical biology. And I went to Oxford to do a PhD under a doctoral training center, which was called Synthesis for Biology and Medicine. And that was great. But I think the most important part of that was that it was really heavily industrially supported. So I was able to kind of roam freely between different pharma and contract research organizations. And so I found myself collaborating with Evotec, with AstraZeneca, and with GSK. Spent a lot of time in those organizations as well, both on the computational drug discovery side and computational chemistry, but also in the high throughput screening labs where they had just built brand new robotic systems to do that crucial part of early drug discovery. So this was the kind of backdrop to my early academic life. But coming from chemistry, where you have really high confidence in your data, you know very reproducibly and with absolute certainty that you've made a specific molecule at the end of your process, the same was certainly not true in the biology labs. And that kind of shocked me, especially when I had visions of coming to Oxford and finding these beautiful, tidy, organized, really well-equipped labs. Now, the equipment was fantastic, but the chaos was absolutely shocking. And it was no surprise really to learn along the way that the quality of data coming from these labs is really unreliable. And you don't know which data is good, which is bad. So if we looked at the academic publication landscape, there were reports showing that as much as 89% of publications couldn't be reproduced in other scientists' hands. In other words, 9 in 10 papers, more or less, is a waste of time and a waste of space. But unfortunately, these are the kind of foundations that we start drug discovery processes from, drug discovery programs, on these kind of hypotheses. And I guess it's no surprise following on from that, that so many drug discovery programs indeed fail, perhaps due to misunderstanding of the biology, things that we were confident in that were perhaps unstable foundations. So, this kind of background was stewing. I'd also met my co-founder, Martin. We were engaged at the time in some entrepreneurial projects together. We'd started an entrepreneurial society trying to bring scientists and the government and VCs and policymakers together for kind of interesting events and encouraging them to think about things. So it was a really good way of understanding the kind of broader landscape outside of academia, which I think what every typical academic journey provides. And I think that's a brilliant platform for starting your own entrepreneurial venture, understanding the interplay between those different kind of bodies. Yeah, so we started thinking together. We were both shocked by this. He came from a clinical background, and we completely agreed that the state of the cell biology labs and the way that research was being done with such highly qualified staff spending so many hours each week at the lab bench doing really menial, repetitive tasks, apparently with outcomes which are inferior to ways which we'd seen could be applied. So it was a kind of a no-brainer, really, to think about establishing a robotic-based platform capable of doing drug discovery or, more broadly, basic research processes in an automated way. We'd seen, and everyone knows the benefits of automation in the context of high throughput screening. It's consistent, it's precise, the robot is doing the heavy lifting, but we have never really found a broader application outside of that particular process. And at the time, we didn't really know what automation capabilities were available. Certainly neither of us, by any stretch of the imagination, is an engineer. So it was kind of a bold naivety, I suppose, which led us to pursue this. And our idea at the time was, I suppose you could describe it as something along the lines of an Amazon Web Services for the life sciences, a centralized facility that takes away the need to operate, manage, control that internal infrastructure or on-premises infrastructure. So taking the need for a laboratory away from the scientists, centralizing those processes and allowing scientists to interact with that resource through the cloud. We were awarded quite ambitiously by Innovate UK some funding to pursue a feasibility study, so really early investigations into this concept. We went through the painful process of dissecting around 550 academic publications. We mapped out all of the processes, the consumables, the reagents, the instrumentation, had this crazy kind of diagram, which showed the popularity and the popularity of different processes, but also gave us a clear roadmap of what could be automated and what couldn't. So early on, we excluded certain things like, you know, worms and mice and fish, which we just didn't want to go anywhere near. Yeah. But the whole domain of cell biology, biochemistry, you know, that was really ripe for automation. But clearly we needed a radically different control concept so that the benefits of automation could be realized outside of high throughput screening. So yeah, this is kind of the formation of the idea from seeing a problem and then investigating the feasibility, still really early stage.
And when was this? Because you are talking to academia and the CROs and the, you know, big pharma, and then you notice that there's a problem, you playing with that idea, maybe thinking that setting up a venture is the right way to create a solution for this problem. And that is around 2018?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit earlier than that. In fact, it was during our PhD, but it took us some time to go from, you know, just an evening discussion into something where we started committing every Saturday to into something that, you know, eventually won grant funding, venture capital funding, had employees and began to be a real, real competition for our time versus the PhD work. So, no, this long story short, ultimately I ended up dropping out of my PhD around halfway through my thesis after 4 or so years of painful lab work. But, you know, I've never really looked back. It's been a great journey with Arcturus, and, you know, I still get that scientific satisfaction from building the team and engaging in those projects that we do now.
We've been following you guys for some time. It's definitely one of the best companies out there doing this type of work. So from the point of then 2018 or a bit earlier, can you bring us to today and add a bit more color to what you briefly mentioned?
Yeah, I suppose the backdrop has been a funding trajectory, which is along the lines of grant, pre-seed round, grant, seed round, grant. And we're now at the point of, in the midst really, of raising our Series A, which we hope is kind of wrapped up and can be shared more publicly soon. And over that time, we've expanded from a really crude prototype in the laboratory in the middle of nowhere, which was like a disused RAF barracks, and then upgrading massively to Milton Park, which is, you know, the neighboring site for Evotech and Vertex and Immunocore and the likes of that. So yeah, it's gone from tiny prototype to an ever expanding commercially ready automation platform. We can automate processes from really complex cell biology all the way through to really deep mechanistic enzymology and drug target interaction studies. So the diversity in experimentation is really powerful, and the quality of the data that comes from automation is, and as we thought it would be in the very beginning, even from a theoretical standpoint, it's richer, it's reliable, it's more precise, and it's, you know, the process of automating something is equally the process of digitizing something. The protocol is then captured in software, so then it can be repeated on day one, day 100, day 1,000. You're able to create new data which can seamlessly integrate into that original data set and expand as needed. So whilst we originally saw this whole concept of, you know, remote access automated lab processes, it's really evolved into a specific niche whereby, yeah, there's been an explosion of companies doing computational approaches for drug discovery, and they really appreciate this kind of feature of the data, the precision, the reliability, the depth, the quality. So we've found a really good partnerships with those kind of entities, be it in silicon medicine, We've recently announced two separate joint ventures with Evereast and with Cyclica, where there's that beautiful synergy between computational modeling, machine learning, for example, and the robotic data generation. So I think that's really where we've found the best fit. And I think that's really the core of where our future lies as well.
Oh, I see. And so what's the size of the company in terms of headcount? And also you have now two labs, right? Additionally, one in US, Boston, and another in Singapore.
Yeah, so we have like a commercial office in ready to have feet on the ground in Boston. Martin, the CEO, spends an awful lot of time out of there. I think it's really quite clear to everyone that's one of the main epicenters for not only traditional drug discovery, but also this new wave of data-driven drug discovery companies. It's also the main sort of epicenter for funding of these kind of ventures. So it's quite clear that Boston will play a big part in our future. The company at the moment is mostly centered around Milton Park. That's where our headquarters are. That's where our labs are. And we have a team approaching 40, divided between scientific, data science, machine learning, engineering, automation, software engineering, and of course, commercial. So it's growing rapidly. We've roughly doubled headcount year on year, as far as we can remember.
That's just amazing. And you were mentioning about a couple of partnerships in silico and then two recently announced ones. So can you tell us a little bit more about the structure of that relationship?
Yeah, in the case of Cyclica, in the case of Evereast, we formed a joint venture because we see very equal partnership and we see very high synergy between our approaches, Arcturus being the experts in robotic data generation, producing really high quality data sets, which can feed in for machine learning model training, but also validation. So we get an iterative cycle. We can reinforce that with our data. And on the other side, we have Evereast, we have Cyclica. Both of them have their deep specialism, their specific flavors of machine learning for drug discovery. In the case of Cyclica, they specialize in polypharmacology. So we're prosecuting two targets, which we intend to hit with a single drug. And yeah, this kind of the depth and the precision of data that's required to discriminate between these and to provide the data that is necessary to understand which drugs are really showing that effect is something that I think only Arcturus platform is well equipped to provide. So we found a really good working pattern there where we hand off data to inform their decision making and the next molecules arrive at Arcturus and the cycle continues. Much the same is true with Evereast. They have a slightly different, more structurally guided approach to machine learning. And in that case, we're pursuing a target which we've now disclosed. It's c-MET. There's recently been approved drugs for c-MET as a treatment for non-small cell lung cancer. However, they've rapidly encountered resistance. So we're understanding from a clinical perspective through biopsies and genomics, what is the exact origin of that resistance? And therefore, how can we overcome that with a best-in-class molecule? Again, the robotics providing not only high-quality data, but also very rapid data generation to make sure that those design cycles, that DMTA cycle, can accelerate as fast as possible.
You said that you guys studied about maybe 550 different, you know, publications and look for different type of assays and maybe found the, you know, most common ones and implement it internally. But some of these companies might have their bespoke assays or, you know, certain alterations to what you might have studied before. Do you expect them to come in with their expertise and set the protocols for you and then you automate afterwards? Or you basically say, no, don't worry about it. We got this, and then you do everything with your team?
It's a very good question. I think that's something that sets us apart from other approaches. So we take ownership for the design of the experimental protocol. It's one of the main lessons we had actually from the beginning that in fact, it doesn't make sense to build a big, you know, inflexible cookie cutter factory with a library of off-the-shelf protocols because the diversity and the specificity of experimental requirements is just so vast that it's far better, you know, scientifically to design every experiment, you know, purpose fit, bespoke for the scientific questions in hand. Mm-hmm. So when we engage with other partners, when we engage in collaborations, we get together as equal scientists, we discuss the problems, we set about building an entire sort of experimental plan, which might be multi-months rather than sort of on a granular assay basis, as how best we can address those those challenges and those questions. So I think it's a true thing that the robotics themselves are not intelligent. They need to be told down to the very last detail exactly what to do. So I still think there's absolutely a role for the expert scientist, the drug discovery scientists that we have in our team, to help design the experiments in the most effective way. So that's where we provide additional value, because we guarantee that the data is meaningful, relevant, and reproducible.
On that reproducibility point, so I mean, it's awful that only 10% of all the work that has been studied is reproducible. You probably increase that to a much higher level, but is that something that you check and put a figure on?
Yeah, I mean, on an experimental basis, we would guarantee internal consistency. So we always run controls which verify that that particular assay has worked as it should. And if there's any doubt, we dig deeper until we fix that problem. Obviously, we can only control for so much. We're very cautious that we only work with ECACC cell lines which are verified. We ensure that we run automated mycoplasma testing on a routine basis. Our robots take care of cell culture to try and minimize cell culture variability that can be introduced by human perception or handling. So we do our very best, but I think there's always that element of biology which is very hard to control. It's a tricky problem. Those cell lines mutate and evolve over time. There's just so many factors which are difficult, and we still have an incomplete picture of the way that biology really works on a fundamental level. So I think until we have a full understanding of biology, controlling every aspect is going to be near impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely so. And when you sit down with a partner, you understand what they are trying to achieve. You try to visualize the protocol in front of you. And do you say that, okay, we can automate everything here 100%, or you chop in bits and pieces and say that this is going to be a semi-automated system and we have to hire this many extra people to kind of ensure that the bandwidth is even around every step?
Yeah, there are some things which automating provides more value compared to others. So for example, automating liquid handling steps is one of the most crucial things. One of the biggest determinants of data quality at the end of an experiment is how automated the liquid handling was. So we take great care to ensure that is the case. On the other hand, whether it's a robot that loads a plate onto the deck or whether it's a human, that has less impact as long as they don't make a drastic error. So there are certain things which are very expensive to automate, which don't add particular value to the quality of the output. There are other things which certainly are crucial to automate. So we try to balance that, and we're constantly extending the breadth of the automation over time. For example, adding automated fridges and freezers ensures that the right sample comes autonomously into the deck at the right time. But equally, as long as a human is there to do that, then that's a massive pragmatic shortcut, which removes a lot of complicated robotics. So it's always a balance of pragmatism, but I think the further processes can be automated, the more you can also benefit from things like 24/7 operation, economies of scale, scalability, all of those things really come into play with robotics once the process is fully automated.
And when you think about the innovation that you bring into this field, is it more on the process level? Or would you say that you will, on particular cases, go and invest into a particular instrument or a robotics arm or some other type of platform that integrates two machines?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right at the beginning. We consider ourselves to have process IP. So we do not worry about hardware innovation. If there's a brand new microscope that comes out, that's the microscope we would want. We would always want to have the most cutting edge piece of instrumentation in every aspect that you look at. We don't worry about the robotics. We don't worry about the hardware. The configuration of the hardware, on the other hand, is something which we've been evolving over time. But crucially, the IP and innovation lies in the wealth of automated protocols which we have under hand. It lies in aspects of the control software which allow us to run multiple automated processes concurrently. And the end-to-end automation means that we also pick up those data assets which are created upstream during and as the result of an experimental process. And those get merged into databases in a structured way. They also get turned through analytical pipelines to output beautifully presented reports in a matter of seconds. And so that full automation story, not only the process, but also the analytics, is where we gain our advantages as well. In more recent times, because of this obvious symbiosis between computational approaches and the robotic data generation, we've now been building out our machine learning team, who are focused on machine learning for small molecule drug design, because we're able to feed that kind of design cycle with really high quality data in a very rapid and efficient way. So it makes obvious sense for us to evolve that as well.
I spent about 2 years as a software manager in a robotics company. So I really appreciate the complexity of the thing you guys are trying to optimize, integrate, and put under a process. What would you say is the most difficult of this process IP that you guys are building?
I think the hardest part is getting teams of software engineers and teams of scientists to fully understand one another and actually nailing the specification of what's required to fulfill an automated analytical pipeline, for example. That can be really tough. The extent of terminology misunderstandings and miscommunication is quite mind-blowing. So we've kind of built an internal language, if you like. We try very proactively to get these teams to work together as one, not building two separate products and technologies. That's a real challenge. It's a human one. It's an operational one. But I think that surpasses any of the robotics themselves.
Maybe there's something you can open source, that internal language. I think many, many companies will need that eventually. I definitely have seen that issue when we were going through some instrument development and process development as well. And in Antiverse, like half of what we do is biology and the part is machine learning. And we still have to, you know, kind of merge those concepts and the terminology so that it makes sense. It means the same thing for both teams. Do you remember the company Synthase? They were coming up with an operating system for all robots, like Anta, also, I think.
Yeah, we're aware of those guys. I think they're doing quite well. It has been of relevance for us, but I can certainly see how it's useful for companies who want to simplify the control of their robotics. I think that's one of the challenges we encountered early on that we chose to tackle ourselves, is that you're communicating in the software sense to numerous different devices, and you're trying to make them work seamlessly in concert. And that's one of the technical challenges we've overcome. Mm. And in order to do so, you need to speak to many different drivers. So if I understand what they built correctly, it allows labs that have aspects of lab automation and instrumentation to kind of pull that together in a simplified, you know, interface, as it were.
Mm-hmm. What does the future hold for Arcturus? Where do you see this thing going?
I think one of the evolutions that we're in the midst of is moving away from, if you like, experiments as a service, and really applying what we think of as a drug discovery engine purely for our own IP generation, our own drug discovery projects, be that in partnership or be that fully Arcturus's ownership. So I think that's one really interesting thing for us. Whilst the platform itself can feasibly do any therapeutic area, and if it can be pipetted, we can automate it to a higher standard. But in terms of scientific breadth and depth, I mentioned the importance of the expert input. So we've chosen strategically to focus on oncology and neuroscience so as not to be spread over infinite disease applications. So I think that's one thing, really, to double down on our drug discovery capabilities internally to enable our platform to support drug discovery from really early stages, you know, target identification, target validation, as it does, but all the way through to late stages, building out our toxicology capabilities, DMPK. That's the kind of thing we have on the horizon. Also, if we look at the whole design, make, test, analyze cycle, the crucial missing part at the moment is make automated synthetic chemistry. My background being in chemistry, I know full well the specific challenges that presents. You're dealing with substances like marmite or like brick dust, and two of them in the same reaction. So it's really fiddly. I think it needs a quite radically different approach in order to be automated. So we've been collaborating with IBM for about a year and a half on fully automated closed loop drug discovery, where we combine robotic synthesis with the robotic data generation and computational approaches, so that whole design, make, test, analyze cycle is autonomous. We've learned a huge amount from that, and I think it gives us hope for where the future of fully automated drug discovery lies.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you follow that path, it's going to be a good business model for your investors as well, no? You're planning to have basically multiple exits at different time horizons through these partnerships, if I got it correctly.
Yeah, I think the partnership approach is, you know, we recognize we can't be the specialists in everything. And through our services work, we were able to kind of give a bit of a preview to the actual behind the scenes technology in many companies. So we're able to see kind of who has real technological substance and perhaps who doesn't. And in doing so, we're able to identify who would make really strong partners. And we have great faith in Cyclica and Everest. It's been great working with those teams. The other advantage of the partnership on portfolio model is to not put all of your eggs into one basket and not necessarily take full ownership of every single project. But whilst it's still difficult and while success rates in biotech are still really challenging, the goal would be to become a company which can actually endure one or more failures and still have enough capacity and enough momentum to take projects successfully into the clinic and beyond. So whilst that's a challenge and you know, we need some really ambitious investors on board for that, but yeah, it's a big ambition to be able to take multiple projects in different partnership structures all the way through to the clinic and beyond.
Thank you. So we have a few questions and I'll switch over to one of them is from Michael. What data or MVP did you have to secure your first grant?
Our very first grant was literally a feasibility study. So in that respect, we had no data or MVP. We had a compelling argument about the shortcomings in the way that things were currently being conducted. And we had a compelling argument for why automation could be a solution for that. But a lot of questions still need to be answered. And the purpose of that grant, you know, Respect to Innovate, was exactly to go and investigate those things. And we kind of came away essentially with a business case and a technical roadmap as to how we would tackle it. And that was the argument which we took to some angel investors, which allowed us to win some early financing. So yeah. Massive thanks to Innovate UK for being bold and ambitious and believing in us. And I'm glad that the feasibility study kind of came back positive. And I think we've been proving that was the correct interpretation from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, Innovate UK was fundamental for our progress as well. We applied and got 2 grants from them. And then it helps a lot with, I think, de-risking not only the technical side, but they have also a section for exploitation of that technology. So you can use some of it for commercial de-risking too. Another one from Jorge, senior scientist, Novartis Pharma Lab. Hey, Tom, super interesting talk so far. I'm super curious on which display technologies you are able to deploy. I imagine different ones will have different constraints regarding automation. Thanks. I'm guessing it's phage display, mammalian display, ribosome display. No, that's what is intended by that.
Hey.
Hey.
Yeah, that was the answer. Like, if you either only deploy phage display or if you go towards like yeast display, DNA display, etc. Because I think there's also one question regarding that. I predict that in phage display, you will have a lot of cross-contamination since phages are like a very sticky, complicated thing to work with.
It's a really good question. I think the answer is quite simple. We deal so extensively with complex mammalian cell models that we don't do any other organisms in our laboratory at the moment. We simply don't have the space, and the risk of cross-contamination, as you mentioned, is going to be too high for us. We do plan to establish protein production capabilities with yeast and the likes and E. coli, but that would all come, you know, at a later stage for us when we have more room. So yeah, the disappointing answer is none at the moment, I suppose. There's a lot of phage display aficionados on the line.
Okay, there's another question. This is from Peter Pack. I'll show it on the stage. Hi, Tom. You said that automation is usually more reliable or reproducible. I headed a team in the past establishing the semi-automated automation of phage display panning, picking, propagation, etc. on 384 well MTPs and 8 needle robots. And I think it continues.
I think there's there's continuation.
We found to have more different cross contaminations, good binders / high expressors, overgrowing others, and some really strange contamination issues via different MTPs, different days, etc. More than in the manual mode.
Well, that sounds really frustrating. And yeah, automation's not easy. And sometimes you have to go to extra steps above and beyond what you might do manually to avoid these kind of issues. I suppose there are some platforms such as yeast or bacteria, which might be more prone to cross-contamination. But in our mammalian platform, we've been really lucky with that. So yeah, I think automation doesn't solve all scientific challenges. But with the right application, I still think it's the way forward. So yeah, I can imagine how frustrating that would have been. I'm not promising that automation is going to resolve that.
Good. So when I look at the audience, I see some people from pharma, biotech companies, and etc. Before we move on to the network session, Tom, do you have any closing remarks? Maybe any ask?
I'd love to chat with anyone who is interested in this kind of intersectional technologies between automation and drug discovery. It's probably a rich pool of them in the attendees. So it'd be great. I mean, either for talent acquisition, investors, collaborations, I'm open-minded. So looking forward to meeting you.
Fantastic. It was a pleasure to having you today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.